A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's go back to 2011. Look at the World Cup with Squish. Let's go back. Oh baby, let's go back with Squish.
Hello and welcome to the Squid Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the only rugby podcast that just had a bath in 2011, and it's 2011, and it's 2019, and it's 2021, and I can't remember the year.
You were about to say 2019.
I got completely lost. It was about to say 2019, because in my head, the World Cup only just finished. I'm still kind of stuck in that mindset. I don't quite know what's going on at the minute. I am joined, as ever, by Mr. Will Owen. Hello,
that
how are you?
That is indeed me. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm just as well as you just heard. I think I demonstrated quite accurately how well I am.
Good.
And we are joined as well by, from BT Sport, from Channel 5, from Sky Sport, from Rugby World, from Rugby Pass, and most importantly, from Bedford, Sam Roberts. How are you doing?
I am very pleased and absolutely delighted that you put those in that order, because in a funny sort of way, the latter is the most important. And we all know about Rugby Roots. You know about Rugby Roots more than anyone. And they are just so important. And when you come from a rugby town like Bedford, and what Bedford Blues has done for me, for my family, and I mean that, it sounds really grandiose, doesn't it? But I just mean that. When a rugby club at the heart of a society does that for you, it's absolutely fantastic. And it is a pleasure to be on the show, not for any other reason than my street cred has suddenly gone up just a little bit with my teenage son. So there you go.
That's amazing. Well, you'll be glad to hear that actually the majority of the conversation that goes on in this podcast, in any episode, is actually all about James Pritchard, the Bedford Blues legendary fullback who played in this World Cup.
I could tell you a fair few stories about James Pritchard. Many of them are very boring, like the dear man himself, who is an incredible athlete, incredibly focused, and just an absolute straight down the line diamond. And for the Blues, wow. I mean, there are very few people who can touch Mikey Rea as far as goal kicking is concerned, but maybe even James Pritchard does that.
Because he was, and it's the thing I think of when I think of Bedford Blues as a club, is James Pritchard and his commitment to them, and him having offers from the Premiership and from France and so on, and staying at Bedford because he loved the club. And I think that always said so much about them, you know, and despite consistently being sort of there or thereabouts in the Championship and never really being the team, you know, playing whoever it was that just been relegated for the place at the top. I always thought that said so much about, yeah, Bedford Blues as a club. You can see so much from that.
For the record, if anyone's wondering who currently is the team that's just been relegated, that is Saracens. I will repeat, Saracens.
How are they doing? How are they doing, by the way? How was that?
I think they might have lost at the weekend. I saw one or two posts about the fact they might have lost against Ealing. I got into a Twitter argument with somebody who was very, very, I think it was anti-Ealing. I think it's not difficult to find that sort of, obviously, sort of
it's a niche.
On Twitter, somebody to disagree with you. But he suddenly came on, and I was like, oh, all I put was, you know, woohoo or boom or whatever it was. And we had a long discourse about how Ealing weren't doing this and weren't doing that and weren't value for money. And I said, okay, well, never mind. We'll just as his Twitter's want, you know, you put something on there saying, here it is. And then someone picks up the glass and starts to shove it in your face. And you're like, no, I just, all I was saying was that it was quite good for Ealing. Is it not? No, it's not. No. Okay, move on.
Yeah, you know, Saracens still yet to win a single game ever in the Trailfinder Cup.
It's worth noting that Saracens are the only Championship team who have lost a game this season.
That's very true. I mean, if there was a table running, they'd be bottom, wouldn't they, really?
Yeah. They've got a losing bonus point, their name, to be fair. Did you see their official accounts post?
Yes.
The way they spun it is a brave losing bonus point secured at the death by Saracens. Wow. It's like, mate, you were the European champions a few months ago and you just lost to Ealing Trailfinders, who didn't even have their strongest team out.
What I really liked about that tweet is the fact that the picture they had it was of Billy Vunipola. So it's like they're flexing that Billy Vunipola was playing and they still lost.
They had two players who played in the World Cup final playing for them.
Yeah. One of whom won in the World Cup final.
I think you know, you've got to give them their due. They are sort of doffing caps in various different directions and all of that. But I understand latest news. You'll be aware of various different things breaking. No relegation from the Premiership. They'll go back up, probably joined by someone like Ealing Trailfinders or some random South African team if they can find one, and it will all be done and dusted. I don't want to sidetrack this piece into what the Championship stands for and what it means to me, but you can imagine it's just so very important. And I'm not the ring fencing thing is not that much of a sort of chalice to me. It's not that much of a kryptonite to me. I don't start sort of shaking my fist and pointing at people. I understand the ring fencing argument. If it happens, I just hope that someone steps in and looks after the Championship and gives it something to be, because if it doesn't, then that will be a crying shame. If ring fencing was to allow the Championship to have the input and the support and obviously money, but you know, just a little bit of tender loving care, just to bump it up a little bit, I would be happy, and the Premiership can go and play, and the Championship can. But as long as it was still developing, the big worry is that if the ring fencing comes in, they sort of cut the head off, and the rest of the snake dies. And I think that is the worry for everyone. If someone from the RFU or indeed Prem Rugby could make an agreement with us that Championship would get tended to, would get looked after. I think we could probably live with the fact that they want to ring fence it for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. There's so many signs to the contrary. You look at the cuts in funding even prior to COVID, you know, and then post.
Yeah.
And particularly, you know, we saw Nottingham RFC being furious about it.
Yeah.
And you understand why, you know, you understand there's a lot of those teams who are dreaming of playing in the Premiership, you know.
Absolutely. It's very easy for people to look at it and think that the Championship standard is a lot lower than the Premiership, when really, like, it's still such a high standard. Like, so many players are playing just before the best rugby of their career in the Championship, or Premiership players who are playing to a good standard but not every single game, who then get thrusted down to the Championship. It's such a good standard.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of these clubs are operating at that level and being able to produce that sort of skill level, that sort of technical awareness, that sort of power, that sort of emphasis on the pitch with very little support and very little money.
Yeah.
You know, they won't ever have this again by the looks of things. The near future looks really quite bleak for the amount of money they will get from the pot. But even with the 670-odd thousand pounds a year they were getting from the RFU in their heyday, you've got to build a squad of, what, 40 players with £670,000? I mean, do the math. It's ludicrous to think that you can do that. And yet the Championship does. And I'm pleased to say that you've noticed it. I certainly have obviously noticed the skill level as being good. Mm. It's not the same as the Premiership. I don't want anyone to lay into me and say it's not the Premiership. Of course it's not.
Yeah.
But the quality that is attained, it is quite remarkable considering. And I think that's where we need to remember with the Championship. And my goodness, if they were to get, just as I say, a little bit more tender loving care, who knows where it might go.
Yeah, absolutely. I am going to move us on, if that's all the same for everyone else.
Boring.
Because we've mentioned some of the Championship. There are some players in this England team who probably felt like it was there. I'm losing track of this already, that kind of segue. I had another segue I was going to make, but it moved on so far from the comment I couldn't make my what would have been relevant to 2011 joke, which is you said Saracens and some random South African team, which in 2011 would have been, oh, two random South African teams then.
Nice.
But they now contribute basically the entire England team rather than, you know, just John Schmidt.
Yeah.
I just love the way that you're able to back out of a sentence. I can't do that on broadcast. Broadcast on TV. I've got to commit to that sentence, and yet it happens to me all the time. I start thinking sentences like, oh, where are you going with this, Roberts? But you can back out of it. I can't do that. Well done. Congratulations.
It's not a skill.
And if it was, this man's a one-trick pony.
Yeah, that's all I'm good at. I'm phenomenal at backing out of... If I were to begin on a sentence, I could easily not go through of actually moving on to the England team for this game. I don't have to finish any of the sentences. So, yeah, we'll quickly touch on the teams while we're here.
By the way, I'm just going to quickly interject. We're talking about England against Scotland from the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
Did I not get that far?
16-12. No, you didn't.
I didn't get that far. Cool. Okay, this is the down. This is what I'm saying about backing out of sentences. I forget when I have and haven't done it. So in my head, that sentence was going to go on. I was going to introduce the game we're talking about. In my head, I did that, I finished that, and I moved on to 16 different things. I was about to start talking about Mike Tindall's attempt to grow a moustache for 2007, which wasn't as bad as Riho Yamanaka's attempt to grow a moustache for this World Cup. Obviously, Japan fullback who got banned from playing in the World Cup because he took a performance-enhancing drug to help him grow a moustache, not realising it was a banned substance, and didn't get to play in a World Cup, but everything in 2019. Anyway, that's a whole other aside. Whew, right.
England team.
Oh, street cred with your son is going down drastically as he realises.
My fault. This is going to be my fault. People are going, look what happened to Squidge. Look what you did to him.
It's really not. It's just in the presence of such slickness, you know, such a... Whoa.
Hang on, Robbie, I've just checked and your YouTube subscriber number has just halved.
Razzie Erasmus has rescinded his comments.
Well, they're probably still looking at who I am and where I come from, but carry on.
And they're all subscribing to you instead. Because that's how it works now. Yeah, so we are coming towards the end of this dreaded pool that has been so much fun.
The penultimate game of the pool where nobody can kick a goal.
And boy, did that theme continue today. Yeah. So going to this game, if Scotland win by 8 points, they go through automatically. If they win by anything, they're pretty much reliant on Argentina's result against Georgia. If they get a losing bonus point or whatever, they need Georgia to win.
Yeah.
It all came down to sort of permutations, and it was that kind of very, you know, last game of the pool type scenario. And so Scotland made a number of changes going into this. So from the last game, Mike Blair comes in. Ali Kellett comes in. There's a lot of sort of more experienced players. Kelly Brown's injured, so Richie Vernon comes in for him. Simon Janielli remains in. Sean Lament, though, comes in at centre. Joe Ansbrough.
Yeah.
So I think it's a stronger Scotland team.
Yeah.
It's certainly a more experienced Scotland team.
Yeah. And very importantly, I say very importantly, it doesn't last long, but Rory Jackson maintains the 10-shirt after what happened at the end of the Argentina game with Dan Potts missing that drop goal. How could he miss that drop goal with Felipe Contepomi 7 miles
Felipe
offside?
Contepomi was in his house and on his sofa.
Yeah.
Like he'd gone so far. He was inside Dan Parks' soul. He was that far offside.
I'm glad you brought up Rory. There's going to... Well, I may continue a little bit of theme about sort of players who get to international quality and don't quite deliver. Does that make sense? Don't quite get to where they need to. And that's a name that strikes a little bit of a chord with me. I mean, there's probably a few of them, and I sort of don't want to call them out, but you do sense that there's one on the England side that I was going to talk about. Just guys that you feel, and you don't know what it is, but they are just missing that X, you want to call it X factor, that thing. They have everything. When you look at them on paper, they have absolutely everything, and yet for some reason, and this is probably what links us so intrinsically to the sport, is the fact that there is something which is almost, you know, undescribable that makes you this as opposed to that, and that would be I think, fair play, I'd be corrected by Scotland fans, I think he lends himself into that category.
Yeah, and I think there was enough you'd see in the games he did play for Scotland. You know, like against Argentina, he was very good in the first half.
Yeah.
And there's enough periods of him being promising, you kind of then look at it and he didn't really kick on beyond this, you know. The following year, kind of Duncan Weir comes in and you know, he then sort of slight, and then Finn Russell emerges about 2 years on from this.
Yeah.
And things just sort of don't, and he ends up playing fullback for Glasgow in his kind of final period before retiring. And it's kind of a shame what happened to Rory Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. But it's safe to say if there is any player in the world who does have X Factor, it's Finn Russell. So it's a hell of a person to, you know, have as your predecessor.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And the England team, to then touch on it, much as they touched on many things in that bar in Queenstown, they again revert back to what is pretty much the strongest team with that kind of... There were two question marks. There was one that Dylan Armitage starts on the wing over Mark Quaito, who scored a hat-trick in his previous game, which, as me and William, sort of, when we'll play rugby challenge on career mode, we always have this rule: if a player scores a hat-trick, they have to stay in for the previous game, no matter what.
The next game, that is.
The next game, yeah. Sorry, did I say the previous game?
Yes. Jeez, you have to go back in time and make sure they started the previous game.
I really can't.
We also have this rule about if a player has scored two tries, you're not allowed to bring them off. Which is really, because the amount of hookers you see get two tries at the start of the second half and then get brought off because it's like a, you know, predetermined change. And you think, no, let them get the hat trick.
And that really should be a rule in life, generally. I feel, and you know, you talk about Stephen Jones was sort of waxing lyrical about ways that you can develop the game. You know, bloke who's absolutely knackered, absolutely hanging. You scored two tries. Yeah, can I come off? No, you've got to stay on for the next 20 minutes. Yeah, but I'm knackered. No, I can't do anything about that. And now you're a liability. So, you know, we got to work with that.
Frankly, that goes down as jug avoidance, doesn't it? Getting brought up. Because, you know, typically, if you get a hat-trick, you buy a jug. So
You've got to. And I think that's that. These sorts of things should be just layered into the game in some shape or form.
Yeah. Just to remind everybody, you're currently listening to a World Rugby meeting on how to improve the game and potential law variations.
I choose to believe that the jug, you mean, they just have to go into Matalan and just like...
Nothing has to be in it.
No, they just have to buy a jug. Just have to just walk around with a jug a bit, come into the next training session with a jug there. They put in the pile, the jug pile. You've got some jug dealers. Matt Stevens, of course, got banned in this England team for doing jugs.
Oh, so glad we went down this route. There were other routes we could have gone down with jugs, and we went down this route. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, plenty of jugs were consumed by England, and some jugs, apparently, according to what you read in papers, Mike Tindall found his face in some jugs, according to one... Allegedly. I really don't like that phrase, but there we are. Yes, yeah. Shall we, before we move on to the game itself...
We're going to do the game? Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm quite happy on the teams.
This, of course, does come after the England evening out in Queenstown. I was looking this up just, you know, prior to recording. I found two things. One, I found the bar on TripAdvisor.
Pod Social.
And it's on exactly 3.0 stars. So it's a very average place to go.
Okay.
So there aren't any particularly standout reviews, which is a shame. I was really hoping I could do some sort of segment on it, but there's nothing interesting. And I couldn't find any results for the dwarf tossing evenings. And there's another comment from the owner of the bar who said, "There was no scandal by any of the English rugby players that we saw. They were great lads, not throwing midgets at all. It was all light-hearted, good-humoured fun. This is tabloids taking photos out of context and telling silly stories."
Okay. Well,
that sounds exactly like what somebody who did witness a dwarf tossing incident would say.
When you have to say there was no dwarf tossing taking place, you've already lost.
That is absolutely right. That is being a 10-year-old in the playground and literally saying, you know, I didn't throw that ball through that window. And you're like, how did you, which window? I see. You literally, I agree with you. I think he's banged to rights there. Absolutely banged to rights. I spoke to Matt Banahan, who's on the bench for this game, and he said he didn't attend because the RFU had put their credit card behind the bar and he didn't want all that to go to waste. So he was in a completely different bar enjoying the spoils of England rugby, which is
One of the good ones.
He was one of the good ones. He was quick to point that out.
Okay. So the RFU had paid for, in another bar.
Yep.
And yet half the team left to... Okay, fair enough.
Let's just put this into context.
Yeah.
We're in a bar together. We've been having a good time, drinking. Sure. And I come up to you and I say, do you want to go dwarf tossing? At that point, you go, well, obviously, I'm quite intrigued by what you said. I mean, you don't go, no, no, I'm all right. You don't do that. You go, you at least have 5 seconds worth of working out what on earth that's
true.
About.
That's true.
You don't just go, no, I'm all right. As though it was like a ham sandwich that was being passed around. Somebody says, do you want to go dwarf tossing? You definitely consider it, even in the situation you're in.
You at least open Google. You at least look up the night. See if there's any videos of dwarf tossing out there.
Local legalities. You know, things like that. These are perhaps the first Google things that you search up.
You raise a very good point.
There you go. But they didn't, so they went for it. And the rest, as they say, is tabloid history.
Yes. And so, yeah, the rest of the England team. Johnny Wilkinson starts over Toby Flood. Ben Youngs then keeps his place at nine, having not played that game against Argentina. And that's sort of, you know, Nick East is back, fit on the bench, but James Haskell starts.
It's best number eight in the world, James Haskell, that is.
Yes, of course, according to Lawrence Dallaglio at the time. Yeah, it's a sort of fairly standard issue, I think, for that period England team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, and it's especially good to see that they have the, at the time, all-time top point scorer in the world starting at 10, ready to, you know, slot a few points for them, especially from long range, and see if somebody can finally kick some goals in this pool.
Should we just start on that then? Should we start on the...
So there's a point, right? So Johnny Wilkinson misses his first three kicks at goal. And Scott Hastings on the commentary says, oh, I can't think of the last time I've ever seen Johnny Wilkinson miss three kicks at goal in an England shirt. And then Nick Mullins is just kind of like, yeah, it happened 3 weeks ago against Argentina.
It keeps happening.
And Scott goes, well, I wasn't watching. So there we go.
The missed kick count in this game, including drop goals, goes up to 6. Ugh. Which, by the standard of this pool, is all right, actually. That's not that bad. There are games that where there were like 9-10 missed kicks at goal.
Georgia,
only having
Romania,
6 was like nothing.
50% of the kicks were missed.
Have you done some sort of thesis on this? Surely this World Cup, what thesis is behind this?
Well, my theory is right at the start of Scotland's first game, especially in this pool. Chris Patterson has a shot between the posts from a conversion. It ball falls off the tee, he misses it. And at that moment, the best goal kicker in the world, who was on a record streak, missing that shot at goal in front of the post, just cursed the whole World Cup.
Yeah.
And no one could slot a single kick afterwards.
And Johnny Wilkinson was just missing kicks out of respect for Chris Patterson.
Yes.
which we know, you know, of all the world rugby players, it was Patterson that he kept on doffing his cap to. That was the person that he kept on looking to sort of say, actually, you're right. No, you're possibly right. You're possibly right. It must be some sort of witchcraft. That's the only thing you can probably put it down to.
Do you want to start talking about the scoring in the game? So yeah. Chris Patterson does knock over an early penalty. And then the next penalty, they hand to Dan Parks, who's just come onto the pitch for Rory Jackson because of a really nasty looking, I think it was a concussion that he'd received. And Parks is, by this point, you'd imagine the long range kicker because the kick's about 40 metres out in the corner. And Patterson, who is the reliable kicker that you mentioned, he's not stepping up. So you think Parks is taking it. And he just kind of chips it over. And it's a really poorly sliced kick. It looks like when somebody's lining up 5 metres out and they just lazily knock it over, knowing they've got the 2 points, you know?
Mm.
But he just kind of chips it over, and then Nigel Owens, who's a touch judge, has to interject and tell him to go to the TMO because it only just snuck over.
Mm.
From the first angle, I actually thought he'd missed it, and evidently so did Nige. But it's alarm bells for this pool when that's the long-range kicker.
Well, there's something in the fact that even the kicks that are successful have to go to the TMO because they look that much like they were missed.
Imagine how bad the game of rugby has to be for a TMO to interject on kicks. I mean, that you're absolutely right. I mean, if I was commentating on this game, you'd think, oh, we're scraping the barrel here, aren't we, really? If having to get him out of his truck to have a look at, you know, whether it goes through the uprights or not. I mean, there's three people out there. Bloody hell, if they can't see it go through the uprights, what have we got?
Do you think that was it? That Nigel noticed a penalty had gone over the posts and just wanted to check, like, hang on, this pool doesn't do successful penalties. Can we just double check that actually happened?
It's very at odds with everything I'm seeing. Yeah, absolutely. I very possibly he's that much in tune with the whole game. It's very possible, very possible. Dear old Nige, bless him.
Yeah.
Do you get that just out of curiosity when you're watching a game as a punter on the sofa or whatever, that you have moments of thinking about how you would have commentated on it?
Yeah.
Or thinking, I'm glad I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. Often I'm thinking, crumbs. That was lucky miss. No, I think the commentary teams that I tend to watch and I tend to look at are exceptionally good, and I tend to really take notes about the people that I'm seeing and doing that with. I wouldn't necessarily suggest that I go through it. It's so difficult to explain without it sounding completely poncy, but you just have to rely on being in the moment and in the zone and seeing what you see and calling it as you call it. And I know that I would call it different to, you know, Nick or Ali or Martin Gillingham or, you know, any of the top guys on the channels that I sort of share or work with, JHB as well. I call it differently, and you just got to be who you are. And I suppose the point I'm trying to make is you can't overthink it. I know it sounds like you probably do. Yeah. You probably sit there just commentating on everything, but you can't because the worst thing you can do, and you'll appreciate this, when I write my notes, I often think of a funny line. I go, oh, that'd be good if that happened. I'll write that down. And then, of course, it's never going to happen. So you can't really. And the only time it has happened is I wrote it down and I remembered it. And about nine weeks later, the same player was commenting on the same player did something. And I said, yeah, he's so slippery, he could get into your wetsuit with you. And,
nice.
And it wasn't for that game. It was because I remembered it from 9 weeks previous. It was Sonotti, and you can appreciate probably.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
And it was just like, yeah, well, that's probably why I wrote it down then, was for 9 weeks ahead of a game that I didn't realise I was even going to be commentating on. So I suppose that's probably where you think about things a little bit, but they've just got to come to you as and when, and I don't think you can think about it too much, if that answers your question.
Yeah, I can't believe you predicted Sonotti doing a really good sidestep. Where's that come from?
No one could have guessed that.
He always looked absolutely magic, and I'm devastated. I don't know. Has anyone known where is he going to pop up again?
I don't know, because it was personal reasons, wasn't it? He's left Newcastle.
So. MLR, please.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. Cool. Absolutely. Yeah. I think he could. Yeah, he could really light up America, couldn't he? In a funny sort of way. Just his mannerisms and the way that he does what he does. Yeah. Hope so.
Mm. That'd be great, yeah. I had actually, prior to the World Cup in 2019, which is still coming up in my head, I made like a list of like extra jokes I might want to throw in at some point, because I predicted at some point I'll be burnt out. And I'm just, it's useful to have, you know, here's a joke about Sia Khaleesi, here's one about Emiliano Buffelli or whatever. I've got written down just in case I need them.
Here's a joke just in case Janko Venta falls over and drops the ball in the process, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it.
But every eventuality.
It will, and that's the thing, and the only time that they will ever do something like that is when you're not expecting it. And I suppose the only thing that you can do to prepare to not be expecting something is to prepare for everything. And in a sense, you are in a way. And that is the point I suppose I'm trying to make. And when I come back to the original point, where I think we were speaking before we pressed record, ultimately the commentary. It is about being in the moment, and it's about complimenting what you're seeing and what's going on in front of you. Too much preparation, too many things done, and it just won't sound good. You need, Nick Mullin speaks brilliantly about the fact that you just need to be someone sat alongside someone else, you know, adding in interesting stuff, but ultimately just accompanying them through it. And the sport, the rugby, is the most important thing. It'll never be dwarfed by what anyone has to say. It's just magical.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very well said.
Speaking of the rugby that was magic, speaking of half of that.
speaking of dwarfs. So,
so we have the Dan Parks penalty that kind of sneaks over. But I think Dan Parks was such a technician on the way he kicked, that he was someone who did adapt his kicking technique depending on the position on the field and, you know, whereabouts he was. I reckon he probably went, I'm kicking into the wind. I need to kick it low. You know, I need to change up how I'm kicking it. And he still got very lucky on it. It was still only over by inches. But I think that was kind of his style. And I think this Scotland team were on top for that first half, certainly. They were all over an England team who kept making mistakes. You know, at one point, Ben Youngs catches a high ball and walks into touch, which is a precursor to what he goes on to do. Yeah. At one point as well, he throws an intercept pass to Dan Parks, which normally Dan Parks catching the ball is seconds before the ball crossing the touchline. So he was kind of doing the same thing.
I do actually have. You won't be able to see it to people listening, but I'll show it to you two on the Zoom call if you can see it. I've got written down Young's heart touchline written in my notes. So, as you say, it is the precursor for that love affair which starts and blossoms over 8 years.
Yeah, I can't really join in. I'm not going to make any convention. I might bump into Ben Young soon, and I can't possibly join in. So I'm just going to say, you guys make the jokes, and I'll nod on Zoom where people can't watch.
That's entirely fair enough. No, and like, you know, I turned the team of the year thing. Like, Ben Young has played really well this last year.
Yeah, he has. Yeah,
And it's kind of much as it's a running joke, he's played very well, and by all accounts, he's really lovely as well. You know,
he is.
When I interviewed Jamie George over lockdown, and he was just talking about how took like 2 minutes to just talk about what a nice guy Ben Youngs is.
Yeah.
So yeah, and he, you know, this was him, and I always think of him, this is pretty much the best period of his career.
Yeah.
That sort of when he first burst into the England team, and he was so dynamic and sharp and just different to every other scrum half England had available
and
to them.
You say this was the best period of his career. This period lasted 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it lasted a long time, and he was like such a consistent, like one of the best nines in the Northern Hemisphere. He was always in the top two there for, you know, several years.
Because he had a sort of slight dip in form for like 2 months, and he went, oh, is he kind of off? And then he came back immediately, you know? And it then, as I said, that then continued for a couple of years. It was probably like 4 years of...
I think that's such a frustrating thing. I think that's why people get frustrated with Ben Youngs a little bit, is occasionally just how patchy he can seem, because he will be able to produce a game and he will be able to do things in a game that very few other scrum halves will be able to do. I don't think any scrum half in the world would have played as well as he did against the All Blacks in the World Cup semi-final. But at that point, I remember receiving text. I remember receiving tweets saying, where has this Ben Youngs been?
Yeah.
Where is it? Why don't we see this? And why? And even Leicester fans, you know, sort of berating that sort of idea. And I think that's where I think maybe the frustration comes from, is that he is and has been able to occasionally, even now in 2019, 2020, 2021, still able to pick out a game and play a game like very few other scrum halves in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a couple of moments as well where you can see that, and in comparison to, you know, Mike Blair was a very good player, and I think generally has a good game. But there's a few moments where kind of, I think circumstance forces things on him.
Yeah.
But there's one point where, because Dan Park stood so flat, it became a really difficult pass for him to Fred. And a couple of times he ended up overthrowing or missing his target or whatever, because he's trying to get away really quickly.
Yeah.
And there's this weird contradiction. Obviously, they start with Rory Jackson, and 4.5 minutes in, he gets injured, Dan Parks comes on. And there are a few times in the first half where Scotland are a team who are taking quick taps, and Blair and Danielli are both coming in and taking quick taps. And yet they're a team with Dan Parks at 10, and it becomes this complete contradiction that Dan Parks will naturally slow down any game plan, no matter how you're playing. You can't play quick ball because he doesn't engage defenders, he doesn't do anything, you know, which is more important at this time than it is necessarily now. He was there to kick the ball, you know, and occasionally he'd pass, but mostly, 95% of the time, he kicked. He looked to kick.
There's
at least
that really telling one moment in the second half when Scotland make a break down the right wing with Joe Ansbrough, and they supply really quick ball, and you think, right, if they get this wide, something could happen here. And Dan Parks's only instinct is to kick it cross field. Granted, they have three people out there, one of them being Richie Gray, who isn't an expert winger, who hold his width all the way out on the touchline, and it makes it an easy ball for Tom Croft to eventually ground and get a 22 dropout.
Yeah.
Whereas it's Dan Parks' instinct of like, right, there's space over there, let's kick it there, you know? And even when they're playing tempo.
Gray, as I say, because it's coming off a break, Gray doesn't have the time to adjust and think, okay, I'm going to chase this kick. So he doesn't begin chasing until after Parks has kicked it.
Yeah.
So he's late on it, and even though he's up against another forward, you know, it's not like he's up against a fullback and he's able to sort of
both
adjust.
Very quick forwards.
He can't get
well,
there. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's
we've all played with or alongside fly halves who have that who have that game plan, which is basically I kick the ball to the opposition unless it's an attacking move, and then I try and kick it to us.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're like, how about we pass it? No, I thought I'd do a crossfield kick, because that's an attacking kick, you see, rather than a defensive kick. So yeah. I am still playing with an attacking mindset.
And it's amazing to see one of them play in a massive World Cup match. You know, normally they get weeded out as they go along and they have to develop an all-round game. But no, but Dan Park slipped through the net.
It's like going up to these sort of fly halves and going, hey, here's, have you ever heard of an inside centre?
Yeah, he comes and holds the ball when I'm kicking at goal.
So, speaking of, there was something you mentioned earlier, Robbie, about the way Dan Parks adapts his kicking strategy, or the way that he, you know, his technique or whatever. Something I find really interesting is there's a point 25 minutes or so into the game where England get a free kick, and Johnny Wilkinson goes to put it up in the air, and he taps the ball off his right foot, then kicks it off his left in the space of about 2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. He's incredible.
He's pretty good. But, like, it's kind of showing off. It's like, we know you can kick off your right foot. We've seen that clip where we've seen you kick off the right foot. Like, you know the one I'm on about, you know?
Yeah,
we don't need to talk about when it was or what the context was or what it led to, whether it even went through the post, you know? We don't need to talk about that at all. But that was just a really interesting point of humbly showing off.
It was like 2004 or something, wasn't it? It was around there.
It was quite early on in the decade. Carry on.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, that reminds me of one of my greatest stories. I'm going to completely digress here, but you will appreciate this story. It's about a pop forward who used to play for Bedford called Phil Bolton. And this actually was on TV, and you can look it up. It is on YouTube, and he tells a wonderful story. He managed to find himself in a bit of space. He's a big lad, plays for Coventry nowadays, a sort of player coach at Kenilworth and things. An absolutely wonderful man. Very long back, extraordinarily strong, sort of silver back of a prop forward. And he found himself running in the open. I think it was up at Leeds or Donny or somewhere like that on the TV. And he found himself in a bit of open space. And the thought crossed his mind to put it on the end of his toe and try and grubber it through. And the video plays out. And please go and look for it on video. It's absolutely wonderful. And his story goes, the fact that he had the thought process in the open, obviously didn't have the gas to go the length of the field, thought he'd put it on the end of his toe. He dropped the ball towards his feet and then had a secondary thought, which was very important. Which footed am I? Am I left or right footed?
Oh my God.
And the ball just hits the floor. He has no idea. And he literally tells this wonderful story where he says, the reason why I didn't kick it is because I couldn't remember which foot I kicked with.
That's remarkable.
So maybe Johnny was doing that. Maybe he was like, oh, left. No, I'm right foot. I can't remember. Oh, yeah, no, I remember.
Just test both. Yeah.
So maybe it's part of that. That's a rugby player's brain for you. Look that clip up. It's absolutely brilliant. I might have to send
it. I will.
Yes, please.
That's brilliant. The other thing about that Wilkinson bit is, A, if that happened now in the age of Twitter videos, that would have been so viral. You know, the only way it could have gone more viral is if he then sat down with one of the Scotland players afterwards and had a beer. But also...
They're all mates, you see. That's the great thing about they're all mates.
You only get this in rugby.
It doesn't happen No one else has ever had a beer of anyone if they weren't playing against them in rugby.
No. Don't look at ice hockey. Forget that. Look, come over here. Yeah. Look at rugby.
The other thing is, there's something really nonchalant and non-show-offy about it when Wilkinson does it. Whereas if Finn Russell or Carlos Spencer or anyone else had done that, even like Dan Bigger, it would have looked really show-offy. It would have looked really sort of big-headed.
That has something to do with the fact that Johnny Wilkinson is incredibly boring. And I mean that in the best, in the best possible way. I love the man. He
unflashy
for the game. But you know, he is just, and I think in the best possible term, he is just completely and utterly focused on the rugby. There's no raising of an eyebrow towards the sideline when he does anything, is there? It's just absolutely all focus.
Yeah, all credit to him.
He's done all right for himself.
He's fine. Another point, not long after this, is England winning a penalty at a breakdown and Chris Ashton getting really wound up and swinging his arm into Sean Lamont.
It triggers the greatest fight in this World Cup, I reckon, or at least the one. If you're a boxing promoter, the one out of all the fights to take place, the one I'd want to be handling the most, which is Chris Ashton against Alan Jacobson. Asher versus Chunk. Tell me you wouldn't buy a ticket for that.
So here's a question for you. What is it about Chris Ashton? Is it his face? I don't know. It's what is it? And I've had a conversation with the man about this, and he doesn't know. He doesn't know what it is about him that makes people want to start a fight with him. And it's not just on a rugby field. People just don't get him or like him. And I'm trying to work out what it is. Is it his face? Is he?
I have an answer for you.
Go on.
Though I love Chris Ashton. I think he's, from what I can tell, a great bloke. But the answer to this is resemblance to Dylan Hartley.
We did a sort of favorite 15 thing where I was, you know, asked to pick a favorite 15, and he was in mine. Like, I love Chris Ashton. I think he's brilliant, and I love the way he plays, and I love the fact that he's a bit of a prick and that he kind of winds people up.
Yeah,
and I think there's something, he's got this kind of like scampish energy, and it isn't necessarily who he is, but there's a sort of energy to him that is inherently quite annoying if you're playing against him. Yeah. The fact that he's really good winds people up because you're a bit like, oh, I got beaten. I can't believe that.
That guy again, yeah.
And I think there is something in not necessarily just his face, but the faces he pulls. And, you know, that everyone can picture one of his two try-scoring faces. In fact, I remember him in Rugby World saying, the feeling when I cross the try line is orgasmic. That's the only word for it. And, you know, things so like
that's
that.
The
like,
face, right, okay.
No. Yeah, that's Chris. We now
all learn something. Yeah.
And, like, there's a, I don't know, you saw the adverts in this game in halftime. The first two adverts, one of them is for Mario Kart Wii, because that was what was on at the time. Yep. And the next one is an O2 advert where it ends with a promotion saying, text pie to this number and they will send you a pie to eat with England's games, as well as like phoning you when they're starting to get you up and so on.
Really?
But yeah.
That's amazing.
The idea was they sent you sort of breakfast food, and it was like, but they sent you a pie and like maybe, I don't know, like a shot of espresso or something.
Sure, northern breakfast food.
Yeah. And the kind of the video promo they were running for this, and they're running during the England games, was, so there's a guy in bed with his wife. Lewis Moody taps him on the shoulder to wake him up and kind of eases him out, and then says, love, don't worry, love, you go back to bed. And she goes back off to sleep, and he goes down the stairs, and like Joe Worsley pumps him up as he's walking down the stairs. He gets into the kitchen. Johnny Wilkinson hands him a cup of tea. And Chris Ashton hands him the pie. Ashton's taking it out of the oven with his oven gloves on, and he clips around the back of the head with the oven glove, which is my favourite affectation. And I think that's it. I think all the other players just did the very standard job after them. They read their line and they did whatever. Chris Ashton was like, I'm hitting this actor around the back of the head. Bloody oven glove.
He is. You're absolutely right. And it's only over the last few years that he's really come out of himself and met and sort of done much more media and much more sort of things. And he's actually a very, very witty, very, very funny.
Yeah.
And great fun. As I say, I was lucky enough to spend some time with him and talk through. This was just before he was leaving Saracens to go to France. Big sort of part of his life. And I felt he came across as incredibly engaging in that way. I felt that there was also, and I think this probably is true of wingers as a whole, because of their binary process on a rugby field, there were some insecurities and there were some worries and there were some anxieties that he perhaps projected, maybe again because of where he was in the world. But yeah, I mean, just a little point on that. I mean, wingers literally are judged by scoring tries. I mean, there's no really any other position on the field that just has this, well, you know, do you score tries? You know, it literally is the number by which you sort of live and die. And that must be a funny sort of way to live your life when you think of all the different things that rugby players do.
That's a really good point. And it was always Ashton's thing. As I remember him talking about his strike rate, you know, that he was very much, he kept up on how many tries he scored per game. You know,
that revolves around pretty much everyone else. You literally are the beneficiary of other people's work, and that's what you're doing. And so, you know, not going through a few games of not scoring probably has absolutely nothing to do with you.
Yeah,
Especially in Ashton's case as well, because like his whole thing was not finishing incredible individual scores. It was popping up at the end of overlaps and line breaks and anticipating the game and running good support lines. Yeah. That's his niche. That's the thing that he's arguably the best winger ever at that one particular skill.
Yeah. And it's something that I sort of mentioned in a video quite recently, but I think Josh Adams has actually been playing very well for Wales in the autumn, but you can't tell because he's not been given any opportunities.
Yeah.
So he's doing absolutely everything asked of him and, you know, like a tiny bit more, but it looks like he's stepped down his standards massively because he isn't in the opportunities he was a year ago or a year earlier even. So it looks massively different. And that's the kind of reality for a lot of wingers. And it then becomes frustrating because you say you're judging that number, be it, you know, externally or internally. You're kind of thinking, God, I haven't scored in, you know, how many other games? This is a problem. And and it sort of probably starts to eat at you and eat at your confidence.
Mm.
Yeah. And it sort of will eventually, to some, you know, the Alex Cuthberts of the world, who again was another player who talked a lot about his own try to game ratio and then had that massive drop off in confidence that led to him sort of falling out of favour and almost becoming a bit of a joke despite him being this incredible winger and finisher.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point you raise.
I mean, I wonder, I mean, this is getting, you know, very deep and very, very dark, but I'd be very interested to see whether players who have struggled with those sorts of mental health conversations that we're seeing more and more of, I wonder how many of those are wingers. I wonder if there would be more of them. I don't know the answer to that. And I'd be interested to see whether or not, because of the binary way in which they play their game and get rewarded by the game, I wonder.
Goal kickers as well, I reckon, probably falls into a similar conversation.
Hmm.
And Johnny Wilkinson is an example of that. You know, Johnny Wilkinson has been quite open and upfront about that. And there's a, you know,
because you permanently have a percentage stuck next to your name, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just don't really have it in sort of other areas of the game. You know, you just don't. Rugby is not, you know, midfielders assists. Well, we don't do that. You know, we don't talk about assists. How many tries have you created for other people? It's just not a conversation that various different people have in that way. And even key parts of the game. You know, turnovers. One, I suppose Jack Willis has made a big point of that recently, and that's been a big thing for him. But even those guys in the back row, they aren't really judged by that in a sense. Yeah. But because there's other things to do. There's so many other things, other facets to their game. But wingers, how many tries have you scored? You know, it's a funny one. It's a funny one.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bit of a fight between Chris Ashton and Alan Jacobson. Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't go very far, but Chunk obviously walks away looking baffled. And someone in the Scotland team, you can hear, say to the referee, he punched me.
Yeah, I was wondering who that was, because he doesn't throw a punch.
No, but
he swings
Ashton's
his arm into
face comes suspicious. Arm comes suspiciously close.
Yeah,
but there isn't a punch. I don't know if it's the TMO couldn't review it, and I don't know if they're just kind of hoping that maybe the toucher saw just enough of it.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's one of those weird periods where there's a lot of things that would be reviewed nowadays in this game that obviously just let go, you know. And as is the case in every game in this World Cup, you just ignore high tackles. You have to, because obviously you go mad because so many are just ignored. So many are just let go. You know, it's maybe a penalty, but that's it at most.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'll come towards the end of the first half, shall we?
Yeah.
So Scotland have a couple of opportunities. There's one where Ansbrough nearly scores, but again, he just doesn't hold his width at all. And the line he runs, if that was today, then that try would have been scored.
Because
of the way the back line would be aligned. But it's weird to think Gregor Townsend was the attack coach at this point.
Yeah.
Like, today, he would make sure Scotland are scoring that try 10 times out of 10. Back then, it was forgotten about.
It's that point that a lot of pundits make about there's too much analysis and too much, you know, blah-de-blah-de-blah setting out. But actually, that would be a try because of analysis and because people have looked into it.
Absolutely.
Rather than players just playing off instinct. And you can see Max Evans as the guy giving the last pass to him. Crabs across as far as he can to try and create room for and time for Ansbrough to get in position, and he doesn't. Ansbrough just keeps it on the same line, and eventually is put into touch quite easily, and it blows the opportunity.
Yeah. Whereas if he was there a phase in advance, it would be a try.
Exactly. Yeah. But then down the other end, having, you know, blown that Scotland, England then get the best attacking opportunity of the game. You know, they turn Scotland over on a scrum, 10 metres out from the line. They get within 5 metres, and despite having a bit of an overlap, the ball becomes really slow. And so Wilkinson sets into the pocket right away, goes for the drop goal despite being, 6 points down, whatever they are, and it's being the best try scoring opportunity either team have had in the game. And he misses it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In keeping with the general theme, I mean, I think this has perhaps been missed on Wilkins. He is missing it in keeping with a very strong
yes,
and so you can't blame him to a certain extent. Yeah, I the only thing I would say about this, as I was watching sort of the highlights of this game through, I was just, and this is again a wider point, I was just remembering that this is what England versus Scotland games used to be like. Whenever you had to turn on a game of England versus Scotland, it was either 6-3 or 9-6. And these were the scores that accompanied you through all of my Five Nations and Six Nations games up to a certain point, until they started playing sort of basketball and beating each other 32-31 with the final play of the game, or whatever it was a couple of years ago. This was, you know, you turned up to this game, you switched on the 2011 World Cup to watch England versus Scotland, and you were like, I know how this game is going to go. It is going to go in multiples of three. There is no two ways about it. This is all that's going to happen unless something breaks towards the end. And as it went.
Yeah.
And I was sort of thrown back, as you've pointed out, that the way that the game has changed and the way that the game has morphed. I remember thinking, these were international matches. This is where it used to go. And people used to botch tries, and tries were such a rare thing for these teams. And you know, Northern Hemisphere teams, they didn't really do it. They kicked at goal, and that was how you built a lead and all of those things. And it's kind of, you know, we've kind of super rugby or whatever it is that's bled somehow into the Northern Hemisphere over the last sort of 5-10 years has changed things. And we kind of turn on a game of rugby now expecting tries to be scored, when really it should be kicks at goal and we should be thankful for them.
This was, to give you a fun stat, named by ruck.co.uk as the fourth best England v Scotland game ever.
When was that?
2017.
Yeah, exactly.
In the week leading into that 2017 game where Scotland, you know, famously won the two tries by Hugh Jones, they named this the fourth best game in Calcutta Cup history.
They're probably right. They're probably right because you know, I think there's several stages in the game that sort of two, maybe three passes are thrown, you know, concurrently to goes backwards and forwards. And you know, again, if they manage to miss Dan Parks out, it's not kicked. And so, you know, that's a good game.
Yeah.
That's a good game.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good game. I stand up for it.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, there wasn't a lot of line breaks, that sort of thing. It was still enjoyable to watch the sheer intensity of it.
It was
one of those where it's really helped by the crowd being so geared up and by the occasion of it. And
absolutely,
you know, this is, despite this being the oldest fixture in rugby, this was the first time a game was played in not England or Scotland. It was the first neutral venue this fixture was ever played in.
Doesn't it, at the start of lovely lists of all the different places this game has been played, including various back gardens and things like that, and places that rugby you would never think, the Oval and things like that, the places that you would never think that rugby would be played in, but the first time that it's ever been played outside of it, but still just the hostilities are still as absolutely key and as visceral as they could possibly. I've started again. Shut me up. Right, go on.
There we go. You're learning to back out of sentences.
Yeah, finally. There's anything to take from this podcast. There's anything you've
educational.
Learned.
Osmosis. You wait till my next game. They're going to be going, oh, you need to finish your sentences. Oh, I thought that wasn't the way forward.
And it's a try for...
Well, it doesn't matter. Anyway,
And they might consider a conversion.
Just watch it on your own. You'll be all right without me.
Figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't it be great? Yeah. I'll just do the good bits. Look, go on.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've sort of got to pick and choose as to whether or not it looks like it's going to be a line break. Whether you think about running... When this backline move begins, like... No, it's going to be a crash ball. Never mind. We'll let this one go.
As you were. Carry on. As you were.
No, you take this one. Oh, there's no one... Right, okay. As you were.
Anyway, sorry.
I
went off on one there about England.
No,
I was remembering that whole, you know, sort of idea of England Scotland matches and what they were like, and as you quite rightly pointed out, this was a good England Scotland match. It was. Yeah. But we have just been spoiled in the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. So again, to move towards sort of the end of the first half, Dan Pox misses a drop goal and then nails a drop goal.
Yes.
On the stroke of half time, that first drop goal attempt was quite poor. Mm. It sailed quite far to the left hand side.
So. He appealed to having gone over. The referee said to Ben Foden, was it good? And Foden said, no. Unsurprisingly.
Did he say it like that?
Touch judge.
Pretty much, yeah. Foden,
yeah.
No.
It reminded me, I remember seeing this happen in the Championship, to, you know, call back to it once again. We were setting this up, but all foreboding for this. One time, them showing it on the highlights on, you know,
if it wasn't James Pritchard, I don't care.
Pritchard never dropped the drop goals, but carry on.
But a drop goal with, I think a few minutes ago, would have won the game from long range, goes over from the fullback. And the referee then turns to the fullback under the post and says, because he wasn't watching, I said, did it go over? And the fullback goes, no, despite the fact you can see on the replay, it clearly does. So he won the game by just lying. And frankly, Foden isn't lying there because of the TMO. But for some reason, Joubert still decided to ask him, like, what's he going to say? Imagine if he just went, yeah, some
go
really
for the
good
TMO on
fair.
This one, Craig. Go for the TMO. See what he says.
So, it's you're prompting the idea of there already was too much reliance on the TMO. There already was. Yes. It's coming into the world. Anyway, carry on.
I like the thought of Craig Joubert going to Ben Foden saying, look, is there any reason why I cannot award this as a drop goal?
Yeah, that's for Scotland, isn't it?
There we go.
Yeah. Then Parks drops his goal at the end of the half where he's just like really rapidly struck. Yeah. Like he gets it, no time, bam, it's over. Yeah. It's one of the... It's a weird one because it's one of those drop goals that normally only winning teams kick.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
There's a kind of confidence to it of, oh, this team knows how to win games.
Yeah.
In that. Unfortunately, that team was also Scotland.
Right. So Scotland go in 9-3 up at half time. Mm. 47 minutes in, Johnny Wilkinson attempts a drop goal and misses. But you think, okay, he's here to play, you know?
Yeah.
There's a bit of back and forth between the teams, including Ben Young's trying this really weirdly shaped chip, which ends up going to Nick DeLuca. The Parks right intercept that you've touched on as well. And there is a really unique kicking battle as Simon Danieli's getting involved as much as he can, chipping the ball forward as much times as possible, which I think is one of those things that you had an accumulator on, you know? Simon Danieli to kick the ball three times.
Simon Danieli it's a really niche skill, but he was incredible at spotting space that he could chase a kick after and put a lot of pressure on the fullback. Like, it was his specialist skill other than having a mullet back before that was a thing for other Scottish players. But there's another interesting moment right at the start of the half that you didn't mention.
Yeah.
So there's a break by Dylan Armitage down the wing. He's sort of scragged by Patterson, but then the man that eventually makes the try-saving tackle and puts him into touch is Dan Parks.
I missed this.
Dan Parks makes a try-saving tackle. Not only a tackle, a good tackle that put a winger who was, you know,
sizeable.
Not necessarily in, but yeah, a decently sized winger going at some pace in a good opportunity where he could have scored into touch.
Wow.
Just for, you know, one for the highlights reel, Dan. Yeah, I say one for the highlights reel. It is the one on the highlights reel, the one tackle he made.
Huh. I did not notice this, but fair play, Dan Parks. Yep. Congratulations.
Oh, speaking of clapping, there's a kick that Johnny Wilkinson misses and Park starts applauding him as he does it, it goes wide.
I like that.
He just starts clapping as it goes wide, which, classic.
Precursor to Mauro Toje.
Yes.
So, there's a point, speaking of Simon Danieli, he has a bit of a half break down the sideline and chips it over Ben Foden's head. Ben Foden, who goes to dive on the ball and just falls over and brings Danieli down with him. That Scotland get within 5 metres of the England try line. And Nick DeLuca, who has just unfortunately thrown a fairly shoddy pass to maybe let Scotland play out of their own 22. He then goes for the two-handed pickup and loses the ball just after coming onto the field. And it's one of those where you just can't help but feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
The slippery ball's got the better of him twice within 5 minutes coming onto the field. And like Nick DeLuca, I actually think, before going in to start looking at this World Cup, I didn't actually think he was that good, but I've come out of it thinking, you know what? Nick DeLuca was a good player.
He's the anti-Anthony Faenga.
Yeah.
There's a, with that chance as well. So
one of those things, right? The way Foden kind of, basically he stops the ball on the floor, you know, the ball's beginning to bounce and he slaps it down. And it's one of those, he's off his feet. So I don't know if it counts as playing on the ground, but it's such a grey area, you probably let it go.
I think he's just trying to dive on it, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he loses control.
But he stops the ball bouncing or moving at all. He just kind of sets it still on the ground, which makes it so difficult for DeLuca to pick up.
Yeah.
And if it had a bit of a bounce on it, he probably takes that and finishes in the corner.
Yeah.
So it's a, it's kind of accidental, but it's a really important moment by Foden that potentially saves England the game.
Especially when the ball's wet, you know, you're anticipating it to move in a certain way, as you have been the whole game. And then when it's sat still, you've just got to pick up a bar of soap from the floor whilst running at full pace.
Yeah.
It's such a difficult skill, and it's difficult to blame DeLuca for it.
Yeah, you can't. You can't blame him for it.
And do you think even at their level, and I've asked professional rugby players this, but do you think even at their level, it is almost impossible to get previous things that have happened in the very recent past out of your mind? I mean, it can't. I mean, we've all experienced it. We've all made a mistake and only then gone and compounded it moments later by trying to make up for something and it not working out. They're mortal, aren't they? They can't think like robots and they'll tell you that they can. And, you know, as soon as it's done, it's out of your mind. But the amount of times that you see it, that you see somebody hit a patch, a little bit like Dan Parks in the other way, sort of doing two things at once that were very good. I think there must be moments where you think, and you see it so many times with rugby players, where they'll do one thing and then the very next opportunity they get, they just get a bit reachy and a bit bit grabby and a bit sort of, this is the moment I can really undo all of that. Oh, no. And you do see it. You do see it.
And it's so difficult to hide in rugby, you know, compared to a lot of other sports. Sure. There's nowhere to hide, you know, unless you're on the wing, in which case you're grand. Or maybe you're a prop as well, you know, unless it's the scrum that's going badly. You can kind of, whatever. But anyway, I think it's often what separates, certainly in the halfbacks, the really great players is they can do that. Yeah. You know, they can make a mistake and pick it back up again. And it's something you look at like Antoine Dupont in the last year, who has just been like phenomenally flukishly good. But there have been a number of times in Toulouse and for France where he's made a mistake and instantly turned it into a positive.
Yeah.
And it hasn't even been, I'm not letting it bother me for the next thing I do. It's I'm going to fix it right away. And you know,
at the level I play, I find that the hardest thing as a scrum half to do is that once you've made a mistake, to try and just come back and do something good. Because it's you have to sort of strike the balance between, right, do I try and do something, a brilliant box kick into the corner, or do I just play to the system and just pass the ball quickly?
You have to find it.
You've got to like rummage through a little bit and sort of smooth out first and then look at doing something. And it's so difficult trying to nail that.
Yeah, I agree. And I can only imagine that probably is magnified by being at a professional level with all of that.
For sure.
And going through those processes. And as you say, just you do end up feeling this immense sympathy, you know, whatever the colours of your shirt, whatever the emblem on your chest. You know, there are moments in rugby that you feel sorry for someone. And then there are moments where people like Vakatawa this last weekend, you think, you've been brilliant. So far in your life, there's very little you've done wrong. So you deserve that. There you go. Unlucky.
Yes.
Poor old Freddie Burns over in Japan. You see? Oh. People, you see? Even
I
Vakatawa.
Miss Freddie Burns.
I know. He misses you.
It's good to know. Old Freddie. So, Dan Parks does a note, or rather it's Patterson, ends up getting another penalty, which sends Scotland 12-3 in the lead. At which point, Nick Mullins points out that they are 9 points up when they need to win by 8 to
top
the group or whatever.
Yeah.
At this point, I have written in my notes, if they scored a penalty after this, I genuinely just think they've won the game at that point. If you go to 15-3 with 20-odd minutes to go, I think that that's a winning team you've got there.
Yeah.
But I think there's two things that are different about this England team, right? One is they come out looking more focused at the start of the second half, generally, you know, in all attributes. They're more like it, which is important. But I think the most important thing is Johnny Wilkinson. And there's a question that Nick Mullins asks of why isn't Toby Flood coming on at the start to Phil Vickery at the start of the second half? And Wilkinson kind of proves his worth.
Yeah.
Because he, from the moment England, the team around him start to look competent, he goes, okay, we're going to win this game.
Yeah.
And he isn't on for the try in the end, but he suddenly, the way he starts kicking and just taking complete control of things, right through to the fact that not long after he, you know, he kicks a penalty that puts England back within seven, and you then begin to think, okay, this is a game again, you know, this isn't, it isn't, as you're saying, that opportunity in which Scotland could tie it up in moments.
Yeah.
And in the moment he does that, England get back into their half, and he takes a snap drop goal, and he hits it so well. Yeah. Like, that's immediate. The moment England win the match.
And it's,
you know,
so
they're
casual.
Still behind, but yeah.
So casual.
It's brilliant.
This is just how you win a game, lads. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And this segues into, you remember right at the start, I was talking about the fact that there are players who you wonder about whether or not they don't quite fulfil their potential international level. The chap I would put into that category is Toby Flood. And the fact that as you have identified, Wilkinson stays on and proves his worth, and ultimately, you know, Johnson is vindicated in a sense, because you have the situation where Wilkinson does what he does. Toby Flood has absolutely every single part of Toby Flood's game, especially when he was on form and not injured, and injuries do come into Toby Flood's career in a big way. He was one of those guys who were like, why hasn't he filled the void that then subsequently becomes? He becomes basically a placeholder, doesn't he, between Johnny Wilkinson and George Ford. He's this weird sort of placeholder sort of name that they sort of look at. I mean, are there other people that you could put into that Barkley a little bit?
Charlie Hodgson a bit,
maybe.
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at theoretically two very, very good sides that England have had, Sir Clive one and the Eddie Jones one, really, you know, really outstanding sort of 10, 12 sort of axis and that all sorted. And it never quite worked out for Toby Flood, but I can never quite work that out. And even in this game, he shows, you know, sort of great awareness to find Ashton and the skills and all that. He's just one of those players that I can't quite work out what it is that hasn't worked for him at international level.
And I think part of that was Johnson rather than him.
Yeah, maybe.
I think there's this tradition England seemed to have in every World Cup, including 2003, apart from 2019, where they would develop really, you know, a really attacking, exciting, sexy brand of rugby and then throw it away when they got to the World Cup. So in 2003, they had that period in sort of 2002-ish where they were beating the All Blacks, they were scoring so many tries, they were playing really attractive rugby. Like, I've heard it described as being, you know, the best rugby England ever played as a nation. And then, same for 2007, you know, they started playing far more expansive rugby, and it was going quite well until 2007 when they suddenly sort of throw it away and go, no, putting all the chips back into Wilkinson because he's fit again. And then the same thing happened in 2011, where they win the Six Nations playing, again, expansive rugby, Ashton scoring, you know, there's four tries against Italy and sort of running in tries from everywhere. No, Johnny Wilkinson's fit again, never mind. And Flood had been on such, like, form of his life, that Six Nations.
Absolutely right. My memory is not what it should be, but I was surprised when you sort of, you know, sort of identified this game and said, you know, go and watch some highlights. I was absolutely amazed. 2011, I was like, all right, let me have a look at the team. I mean, is Wilkinson still playing? I genuinely was a little bit taken aback by that. And I'd kind of forgotten that we had, because I knew, obviously, you know, synonymous with 2003. You know that he's there in 2007. But you think this is a rugby sort of generation after 2007.
Yeah.
He's still there. You make a very valid point.
Yeah.
And I think because he spent so much in that period between 2007 and 2011 injured, you know, he kind of had that one awesome series where he came in and played very badly, then got injured again. And he went to Toulon during this time, you know, and he sort of, it was only after he retired from England after this World Cup that he kind of found it again. He started to play, you know, that really great rugby when Toulon won those European Cups, and he was fantastic for them. And I think it's a really interesting period of Johnny Wilkinson's career, you know, not least because of the hair. I think this is the most interesting haircut he had, because it wasn't necessarily stylish, but it was distinctive, and I like that. There's a bit in which he runs at Richie Gray, and it's a bit like watching like Marilyn Monroe run at a funhouse mirror of herself. Because they sort of had similar haircuts, but one was sort of massive and gangly and sort of imposing, and then one was sort of smaller and slightly sort of... I'm not saying I want to see a Johnny Wilkinson upskirt, but, you know, that's where the sentence would have gone if I'd finished it.
Well, I found the title of this pod. Yeah, brilliant. That's fantastic. Johnny Wilkinson upskirt. Brilliant. Subscribe now. Subscribe now.
Ooh, they've all just unsubscribed.
Just clicking on that. Yeah, that sounds good. Upskirting, I like that.
Let's just Google Johnny Wilkinson upskirt and get myself added to a list.
Let me just look at pictures of there are Sean Lament first.
There are.
Oh, wow.
Enjoy it from xxxnx.inc. Enjoyable Johnny Wilkinson XXNX tubes. Pornoid.
Right. Is that what you've got? Brilliant.
Yeah. There's upskirts of Johnny Lee Miller come up next. Wow, okay, no, I should not have clicked on images. Right, let's
in
move
a kilt?
On.
Johnny Lee Miller of Trainspotting fame, is that? Yeah, yeah. Is that the connecting? I've got the neurons firing there. In a kilt?
Must be. I'm not going to lie. I didn't click on it. And I'm not going to. I'm going to let that one be. You know, I'm perfectly okay.
I don't think you're committed
seeing...
to this. I don't think you're committed to this. I think you need to click those things.
I've just closed it, I'm afraid. But after the podcast is done.
Don't mind me, just searching Toby Flood. Upskirts. Shane Geraghty upskirts.
There's that clip of Toby Flood. There's not an upskirt, but like him really flirting with the post.
Oh, yeah.
That's just come up on my phone. Toby Flood nude. I don't think that's Toby Flood.
It's not Toby Flood. But I love that someone has like SEO'd that. Someone has thought people are going to search for nudes of 36-year-old Newcastle fly half come centre these days. Toby Flood.
No, you know what's happened there is mum's walked in as he's uploading that. And he's gone, just working on my favourite sort of Newcastle Falcons team at the moment. And he's written that.
If anybody who's listening to this wants to see this, just Google Toby Flood upskirt. It is the first thing on there. Alas, I'm not going to attach this to the tweet promoting the podcast.
Oh, no.
Do you have any like related videos like Joel Hodgson upskirts? You know, anyone else?
Yeah, Northeastern upskirts. Oh, no, God, that was awful. Sorry, I didn't have gone taking down that rabbit hole.
Ooh, Ryan Lamb looks really good naked.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I'm glad I came on.
I think it's a very, like, vacillating level of street cred at the minute here. So up and down.
Not so much street cred, it's actual paid work that I'm now worried about. So, if we could just reel this one back, that would be great.
I severely apologise / reassure you. Important people aren't listening. No, that's not true. Everyone that listens is very important.
Yeah.
Like Bill Beaumont, he listens all the time.
Carly Rae Jepsen listens.
Carly Rae Jepsen, big fan.
How do we get back onto rugby from that?
I don't know. We are so far adrift. It's on the horizon. It's just sipping over the horizon.
It's going to take me a while. I need us to get this wrapped up so that I can finally type in Stephen Myler nudes and just enjoy my evening. Why wasn't Stephen Myler playing in this game? Don't know. We would have kicked all those goals. Don't know. There we go. So we finally get into, as I say, England drag themselves back into it. They kick another penalty. They get to within 3 points and they get a really difficult shot, sort of 40 metres out, and kick for the corner. With about 5 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. And Nick Mullins has a bizarre thing on commentary that England taking the defeat rather than looking to push on a win and thinking, okay, because like, Scotland have got to win by 8 points, they're going to run the clock down.
I think what we all know is if England hypothetically played against a home nation in a pool game of a Rugby World Cup and had the decision of either going for the posts or going to the corner, then it would be the correct decision to go to the corner invariably.
Yes, I think that's true.
This is where all the trouble started in 2015 for Chris Robshaw. Maybe in the deep recesses of his mind, this is the game that he took his moment of choice from. This was done before, guys?
See, I always think there was a game against South Africa where Robshaw did the exact opposite. And he took the shot when they were 4 points down with 3 minutes to go. And he got lambasted for it all that week in sort of the rugby press and so on. And I always think that was the moment. That was the moment he went so far in the opposite direction and kind of reaction to that. But yeah, anyway, Chris Robshaw isn't playing. But yeah, so England go for the corner. They win a penalty from the Maul. And with the advantage, they give it to Toby Flood, who doesn't instantly look for a drop goal, and slings it out. And what happens then?
Chris Ashton scores a try in the corner. It's worth actually stating as well that the reason why Toby Flood had so much time on the ball is Tua Lange's carry into the Scottish defence is phenomenal. That he puts them on the front foot and he takes a few Scottish players out of the game. And that is sort of what we've come to expect from Manu Tua Lange. At this sort of stage of his career, he was still mastering that. And sometimes he'd sort of get carried away and stay on his feet too long or that kind of thing. But this time he just slammed into the Scottish defence, took the tackle and set up loads of time for Toby Flood on the next phase to put Ashton in the corner. It was such a good carry.
And they've already got, and they've also got Banahan on the field as well, who probably creates that space for Ashton outside because they're thinking another big man is going to get it because it worked last time, and you know that is where it's at, and it works an absolute treat, and Ashton does what he does, when I watch this, I know obviously it's an important game and everything, but the celebration with Ashton was massive. And I just, it was kind of out of kilter with everything that this, I don't know. I watched it. I was like, that's weird. That belongs in a semi-final. I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I was watching the game too quickly and it was out of kilter. And I don't know. He just ran in unopposed. And then it was just like massive.
And considering
if England hadn't scored that try and the score finished as it was, they still would have won the group. Like the result would have been the same. Yeah. All they needed to do was finish within 8 points of Scotland.
Yeah. Something that I think is kind of telling of Scotland was with 6 minutes to go, they also get a penalty and go to the corner.
Yes.
Which is quite a bold call, and they get into the 22. Sorry. And Dan Parks is on second phase, just sticks the ball in the air, just as they've crept into the 22. And I get that it nearly comes off and they nearly manage to catch Dylan Armitage behind the try line to force a scrum five or whatever. But it's still slightly bewildering that they didn't try and attack the midfield or anything first before going for this.
Well, it's Dan Parks' version of going for broke, isn't it? Hanging the ball just in front of the try line to force England to regather it. Like in his head, there aren't interesting, ornate attacking moves. That's his option. That's his big play to go for the 7 points.
And Armitage does exceptionally well to get out of his 22 and give Ashton a chance to kick downfield. Granted, you know, that the fullback isn't always going to do that good a job, but it does baffle me that he doesn't first think, right, let's, even if it's something as simple as let's give our inside centre Lamont a run at the English defence, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a complicated move. It just has to be try a couple of phases, see how far you go forward, and then maybe stick it in the air if you're not going anywhere. It's a really confusing call to do that in second phase.
Yeah. No, I get that, but it felt very of that Dan Parksy team, and that wouldn't have happened if Jackson was still on the field.
Yeah.
But also, in his defence, is it not also a little bit of the era as well? I know that sounds
true.
You know, and again, you watch these games back, and I would recommend it. Anyone's just joining this podcast for extraneous reasons, like finding weird web pages. If you were actually interested in going back and watching rugby from almost 10 years ago, it's those patterns that you see and that you watch and you go, are just so almost now foreign. Yeah. To us watching what we're doing.
It's fascinating.
You talk about Townsend there in his attack sort of coach role. What was he learning and how was the game shaping and turning and changing in his head and then subsequently? I found it quite weird watching it. And years ago, I found it quite weird. And I haven't, you know, done what you guys have done and been prepared in that sense for it.
It's one thing that that I think is maybe the biggest change is obviously it's kind of your default off, not just off first phase, but off any sort of phase attack, is to have sort of your hit runner and then your boot runner out the back, you know, these days that is in 2021. And in 2011, people are getting done for obstruction running those lines.
Yeah, I was going to say no screens, which is such a massive part of rugby nowadays. Yeah. Is literally that out the back, which it's utterly fascinating to watch. I can't explain it. You watch it, and you're literally going, where's the loop? Where's the Sexton loop? Where's the bit that we see now? Yeah. Round about now in this phase. Why have they? Yeah, it's interesting. It's really really fascinating.
Yeah,
it's been kind of the big, kind of thing we've taken out of watching this. And I think when it happened a lot sort of during the Autumn Nations Cup that pundits were complaining rugby was so much better 10, 15, 20 years ago. But actually, it's so much cleaner now,
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You have so much more shape on everything. And it looks like there's a purpose when teams try and attack.
Yeah.
Whereas there were points here, even when Scotland, as we said, were 5 metres out from the try line, they were just sort of chucking it about. They didn't know what they were doing. And I can get sometimes that leads to it. Exquisite moments of wonderful flair,
sure.
But generally it's probably less exciting to watch if you're Agreed. Improvising all the time. It's like if you've ever tried to watch improv comedy, right? Like there will be occasionally really funny bits that come out of the energy of it, but most of it is not as funny as something someone wrote and workshopped and kind of worked out knowing was going to be funny and kind of built.
I'm reading quite a bit on Pixar at the moment, and
cool.
And I don't know if you are at the moment, but Pixar has come across my sort of vista in a number of different ways, mainly about teams actually, which is a fascinating idea as well. But then I was watching something today on them, and I've been reading some articles on them. My God, do they absolutely nail every single thing down? And when you talk about comedy and you talk about being funny, you think about spontaneity. In a way, they actually create some of the most, not inspontaneous, if that's the word, moments. But everything is sort of is created and structured and done and redone and taken to a group who feedback, and then it's redone, and it's absolutely extraordinary, and it works in uncertain terms. And it just shows that actually you can create brilliance, which we assume or associate, as you say, with sort of off the cuff sort of moments. You can create brilliance by working out every single possibility.
Yeah. And I think so much of the Pixar's continued success is that brains trust thing, is that they spend so long nailing down story and character, and they don't let anything just slip through.
No.
That it is so worked and worked and worked until it is great. And
basically,
within that you've got, sorry, go on.
Pixar is a metaphor for Razzie Erasmus of South Africa.
I think 2015 All Blacks, I'm thinking. You reckon? More kind of yeah
more spontaneity to that,
there's more flair to it.
It's a bit less boring.
Well, exactly. I did actually think I came on this show wondering or not whether or not you were sort of like legally obliged to actually mention him every single time, and you've proven it right, so I'm glad we got to Razzie Erasmus in the end. I'm glad we got there in the end.
Sorry.
He's surprisingly down to earth and very funny.
Yes. He also understands the game and very, very funny.
You know what? That's the reference I was trying to make and accidentally quoted Limmy.
Right. Okay. We've mentioned the Ashton try. That's it. Well taken. Ashton takes his chance well. Flood knows the space. Great carry by Tuolangi, as you mentioned. It's a sort of quite uninteresting try.
But also,
try in the game.
I seem to remember this being around like the 68th minute or something. I didn't realise it was the last 3 minutes. I didn't remember that bit.
Yeah. Right at the death.
Yeah.
Scotland lose both of their crucial World Cup games against other Tier 1 teams in the last 5 minutes to a try by the winger in the same corner.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Chris Ashton didn't beat half of Scotland like Amorosino did, but
no.
Still just as gutting, isn't it?
That video's on the same website. Yeah, so Scotland then do get another chance. They get a penalty on halfway, and because the tries take it quickly, he doesn't get the chance. They end up running. They try to throw it wide to Ansbro, who goes into touch, and that sort of peters out in the end to say Scotland have a chance to win this game and put themselves in a position in which, if Georgia get a good result, they can
go
through.
It's such an anticlimactic end to the game, isn't it?
And this sort of Haskell celebrates, and the rest of the England team are sort of just going, do we cheer? What do we do? Like the England moment, they cheered so hard that they got all of their celebrating out the way for the entire pool.
Yeah.
And they just sort of were like, okay, I guess we go and play France now.
It's a really flat ending to the game, isn't it? Because in the Argentina game, you at least had Scotland trying hopelessly to forge a drop goal opportunity, which was never going to come. Whereas here, it just feels like they have a couple of phases of trying to build something, and then they just kind of go into touch, which is the most underwhelming way to finish a game. Like, I remember the third test for the Lions in 2017 ended with Jordy Barrett going into touch on the wing.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, and that was 15-all final score. And you just kind of think, what do we do now?
But everyone just looked so lost there with that being a draw and was so confused. And that was a feature of it, you know. And it wasn't even like the draw between the All Blacks and Wallabies last year, where the 16-all game that went on for 90 minutes, where eventually someone, it had a dramatic moment, followed by another dramatic moment, at which point someone went, I've had enough of dramatic moments. The ball out.
Yeah.
You know, at least you had a moment of distance there.
I think what happened in this game, this England Scotland game, was that they were waiting for a dramatic moment at some point, and actually just went, actually, it's not coming, so we'll just move on.
Let's get home. The wife misses me.
And so does that random blonde I met in a bar.
Come on, let's go.
Right, speaking of moving on, should we do Dick of the Day and Man of the Match?
Sure.
Okay, I'll start Man of the Match. Sure. Yeah? So it's a really difficult game, I found, to pick a Man of the Match.
Agreed,
for.
Yeah.
I think there's a few, you know, Dan Parks was the official Man of the Match, which I can understand. I think a lot of the Scottish forwards were good, but kind of they got turned over quite a lot, and they struggled to line out, and they particularly struggled at the scrum as the game went on. You know, they started quite well, but kind of wore out as they went on. And again, a lot of the England pack, you sort of were very up and down. They didn't do a lot in the first half. And so, despite the first half, I think my man of the match is Johnny Wilkinson.
Okay.
For the fact that he is the reason the momentum shifts. He kicks that penalty, and then he just goes, this is my game now. You know, we're going to win this.
Yeah.
And I think the game swings on the way he plays, you know. And he's functionally missing his penalties in the first half, and then has that sort of, like, 25 minutes in which he's not quite single-handedly, but he's the reason, I think. England swing, the game changes. Scotland kind of get into that mental that mindset of, like, this is what happens now. England come back and they beat us.
There's so few players in the world who can take a game by the scruff of the neck like he did. Like, it's just him, sort of Ogaras of the world and the Carsters of the world. And really, there's not many others at this sort of time who could do that by themselves. So I think that's an entirely fair shout.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wondered whether you were going to come back to it, and you did. So, I agree. It's interesting. When you say officially, is that the stadium? Is that the broadcasters gave it to Dan Parks?
They did a fan vote for this World Cup.
Oh, fan vote. Okay.
So they put the contenders up.
It was
about
a
10
really
ago.
Weird way to do it.
Yeah. So you ended up with some cases in which, you know, like when Namibia played Wales, one of the Namibia flankers got it, even though the final score was like 81-7. And he came up with a few results like that. But yeah.
And they started the vote at half time. So if somebody had a really good first half, they could get man of the match. Even if they went off injured at half time or whatever. So yeah, it's a bizarre way of doing it. Sam, who's your man of the match?
Well, I was going to say I can't really get away from that. You mentioned the Tuilagi thing. You mentioned that sort of emphasis he had, but there wasn't enough of it. There wasn't enough of it going on in the game from what I saw. And as you say, for that little moment of just switching gears and being able to do that in the game, you can't really look farther than that. So, you know, I would agree and, you know, give it to Chris Ashton. Because that's what he's there for, to score tries.
It would be
to do it. So there you go. No, John, I think you're right, Johnny.
Okay.
For
me, I've got to say, I think mine's Dan Parks, frankly, because there was a part of me when Jackson went off that, in the back of my mind, I was thinking about the whole Anscombe bigger axis that Wales did in the 2019 Grand Slam, which they were preparing for the World Cup. And then obviously Anscombe gets injured, it ruins the sort of dynamic. And I couldn't help but think, is this what Scotland are going for? Have a so-called playmaking fly half, and then you bring on Dan Parks for the last 20 minutes to kick the goals and stuff. Parks comes on and I think, is this going to be too early? Is this going to be a step too far? And actually, most contributions he made were positive. He kicks the ball 22-22 a few times. And I do think that even if they did have Jackson into Parks as they maybe prepared for, I don't think they'd have won the game with that. I don't think they were mentally strong enough. So with that in mind, I think I would still give man of the match to Dan Parks.
Okay. Do you want to take Dick of the Day first as well?
Sure. I considered Ben Youngs for his relationship with the touchline. I considered James Haskell for at one point just smashing Ross Ford off the ball and not getting penalised for it.
Yeah. He just gets away with it. No one says a word.
Yeah.
Which is rare for James Haskell. Anything James Haskell is involved in, normally many words are said.
Yeah. And Dagger, I want the opportunity to call James Haskell a dick, same with Martin Johnson, but they both get away with it this time. However, I'm not quite sure why, but there's something to do with the kind of party wrecker attitude, and most of all, his resemblance to Dylan Hartley, my dick of the day, is Chris Ashton.
Oh, no!
Well, I'm glad I almost gave him man of the match now, just to make up for it, because I know he listens, so that's probably sort of just tipped it in, you know, he's a balanced chap now. There you go. Mm-hmm.
His street cred's going down now, if he's listening to this.
Sam, do you have a shout? Do you have a dick of the day shout? Or anyone stand out?
I go back, I sat in wonder a little bit at that Craig Joubert moment where he asked whether the drop goal had gone over. I thought that was rather unnecessary. You know, obviously what he then subsequently does to Scotland later on, this is all part of it. And I think he's growing, you know, Joubert is sort of warming up to being a dick of the day every time he comes in into contact with Scotland. So I think, you know, maybe that's it.
Fair enough. Yeah, you've covered it pretty thoroughly. And I think sort of, you know, there's a few contenders. There's like, I considered giving it to Lewis Deacon just because I'd forgotten he existed.
Oh, Christ, he played.
And it was like, Lewis Deacon played 18 minutes. Yeah. Lewis Deacon played the whole way. And I forgot he existed until I looked at the team sheet now. Never mind.
I missed that.
But
I don't think that's a strong enough contender. Again, Ben Young's relationship with the touchline, but he's just in love. You know, you can't penalise someone for affection, can you? Who would we be to act on that? It becomes quite hard, but because he missed four shots at goal, my dick of the day is also Johnny Wilkins.
Valid. Supposed to be the best kicker in the world, aren't you, mate?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Put your socks on.
Don't know when he last missed three kicks in a row.
Yeah, it's true.
Thursday before.
Before we finish, of course, we say goodbye to Scotland.
You mean to say that Georgia didn't beat Argentina? Right. That spoiled it for me. Oh, you could have warned me, you're going to tell me about that. I was just tuning in.
I have also spoiled this for all my listeners.
Wins it.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, we say goodbye to Scotland. Thankfully, they speak English, so I don't have to look at what the goodbye is in their national language.
So Scotland had already booked their bus to the airport for the following morning.
Had they?
Before this game, yeah.
Wow.
You can bet England hadn't done that. You can bet the All Blacks wouldn't have done that in this situation. But it is practical, so fair play.
Park sticking that ball up in the air instead of having to go to attack is match fixing. So they have to book another bus.
Do you think that's it? They already paid the deposit?
Yeah. And so it's just like Gregor Townsend and Andy Robertson passing down a message like, no, don't get this shot at goal. We have to get home tomorrow. We have it booked. We've paid put the deposit down.
Yeah.
Cancel the kick at goal. Cancel the kick at goal.
We don't want it. So to quickly, because I realise, Sam, we've taken a lot of your time. Thank you and
pleasure.
Sorry.
It's been a lot of fun.
To quickly... Scotland leaving stuff. It was a good Scotland team. I think it was a good Scotland team who played well and were very unlucky in both of those big games that they lost. And were better than perhaps their results ended up falling for them as.
Yeah. I think if I were to pick out a star of the tournament for Scotland, it would be Chris Patterson. For me, I think he is sort of Mr. Consistent, and both in attack and kicking the ball, I think you could really see what he brought to the team. And not that they're missing him now because they've got Stuart Hogg, but he was a pretty unique player who was great to watch.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of that team are kind of vintage Scotland players, the Jacobsons, the Murrays, the whoever's of the world. Richard Gray, I think, has a great tournament as well, sort of in that finest pomp and hair dye. But someone we haven't really mentioned had a great game in this game is Sean Lamont.
Yeah.
Who I thought was very, very good. And just performed every time they gave him the ball, every time they gave him a chance, every time they put him in the team. And I think he'd be mine, but I think actually Rahura Jackson also was great whenever given an opportunity in a way I kind of hadn't quite remembered. And sort of almost being better than my memory proved, he's up there as well.
Dick of the tournament is obviously Dan Parks for that game against Georgia and how badly that went.
Everyone involved in that game against Georgia. Yeah. But also a little bit Chris Patterson missing that kick in front of the goal that triggered
the
end.
You're
the
right. You've overlooked me. Yeah, it's Chris Patterson.
Yeah. Okay.
Cursing the pool.
Apologies to any Scottish listeners who were wanting a deeper dive, but that's fine. We've gone on enough.
Sorry, we've got to stop the proclaimers now, aren't we?
They're going to be very tired. They're walking all the way home from Auckland.
That's true.
Sam, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for putting up with that. Where can people find you? Where can people find your work, your stuff,
your nudes?
People want to follow you. We can. If your son is listening, you don't have to answer that last part.
If you don't mind, I am going to sidestep like that. Okay. Sidestep like that, like Sonotti. I'm on in a couple of weekends' time, and the Premiership theoretically resumes. You may find me on a distant BT channel. But yeah, I'm there or thereabouts. I'm rather hoping, and we bring it back to the original conversation I had. I'm rather hoping that obviously Bedford Blues get up and running very soon, and we get some rugby back in the town and rugby back in the Championship. And that's where your heart is, and wherever your rugby heart lies, and it can be all sorts of different places when you go back into that clubhouse or back into that arena, however small or however drab it isn't without all those people in it. It's the most important thing to do. So that's what I'm looking forward to. That's where you will find me, hopefully, very soon. And thank you, boys, for letting me on and be part of your world. I hope I represented myself well enough.
Absolutely, yeah. No, thank you for coming on, Sam. Really appreciate that. And welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Cinematic Universe.
Whatever that means.
Tea glasses, I'm all right.
Well, thank you to everyone who has listened. Thank you, Sam, again. Thank you, Will, for being here as well.
No worries,
join us next week when we will be finally bringing down the curtain on this poll and looking at Argentina's game against Georgia, which, spoilers, they won.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.